You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. Mic check, 1, 2. It's Friday. It's a good day. We're getting rain here in Iowa. I'm actually recording this on a Thursday, so it's actually not raining right now, but it's going to rain Monday. Wait a minute. It's going to rain Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and maybe even Monday. So this weekend is going to be a wash. Probably not going to have too many kid events. It is my middle child, my oldest boy. It's his 9th birthday. So we got a weekend full of family events, his birthday party. We rented out a rec center gym. And there's going to be like 20 of his buddies from all his sports that he participates in throughout the season, some of his classmates. And basically what we're doing is we're putting all this energy into a confined space so that way I don't have to really focus. All I need to say is stay in this gym. And then they just run around like crazy for 2 hours, hop them up on as much sugar and caffeine as humanly possible. Then the best part about this is that I give them back to their parents. There's no sleepover. And the parents have to deal with the effects of a sugar high and caffeine crash. So that's what's going on this weekend. But today's a special day because Tony Peterson is back on the show. And as always, it's a killer episode. And it's actually a serious one for the first hour or so, 50 minutes, I would say. And it's a good episode, man. I mean, we talk about hunting rules and regulations. We talk about technology. We talk about a little bit about strategy. It's just a good conversation about hunting, where we're at, what we're thinking, the hunting community, the hunting industry, you know, some of these topics we've talked about before, but really, it's a fresh look at a lot of old ideas. And even I kind of take a step back on some of the comments that I've made in the past. And I've really thought through, maybe I jumped to conclusion on some of my ideas. Maybe I haven't. Basically, where'd that piece of paper go that I had? I think I threw it away. Here it is. Here's a little piece of paper that I have. We got bullet points here. Roadhouse. Bullet point 2. Can we all get along? Bullet point 3, and might I say spelled incorrectly, hypocrites. And then the last 3 are death metal songs that Tony recommends that I listen to. It's a good podcast. The second, stay tuned for the whole episode. please listen to the first part of the episode. But then when we switch and we go crazy on the back end, so you get all this really good information, you get all this really good conversation, and then the end of the podcast is straight bullshit. And so that's the fun part. So listen to the important stuff first, then stay for the fun. It's like a mullet, business in the front, party in the back. So that's what's going on today. Now, I do have to do some commercials, right? Earlier this week, and I believe last week, I just kind of brazed through them. But I do have to talk today about these brands that help support me. So if you could just give me your attention for just a moment, let me run through these. And do me a favor, if there's a product here that interests you, just go to their website or go Google their product. Just check them out some way, somehow. That's all I ask, right? That's my job, right? To inform you about these products. I sell advertising to make my money. This is the advertising. Just do me a favor, go check them out. All right, Tethered, if you're looking for a saddle hunting equipment, they have that new carbon fiber, platform and sticks that are coming out. Man, legit. If you want to be mobile, go mobile with Tethered, tetherednation.com. That's it, man. Everything you want to know about Tethered is at tetherednation.com. Everything. So go check out how to become a better saddle hunter at tetherednation.com. And then speaking of death metal, Wasp Archery. I'm not sure why, but every time I look at a Wasp broadhead, I think of the hardest raging metal that I possibly can, and it's the act of a broadhead, especially a mechanical for some reason, opening up inside the cavity of a whitetail and destroying all its major life, you know, its life organs, destroying that, following a blood trail and seeing what I've done at the end of that blood trail, right? And Wasp does that, whether it's, you know, a full blown pass through double lung broadside heart shot, or it's liver guts that also has a ton of damage. WaspArchery.com. Go check out. Majority of their heads are still made in the United States. I do have a discount code NFC20, and that's going to get you 20% off. Vortex Optics. They have a new lineup of eyewear that everybody needs to go check out on their website, vortexoptics.com. If you want to buy some Vortex products, I can get you a discount code of 10%. And the discount code is 9, the word finger, followed by the 10. 9 finger 10. It's going to get you 10% off at this website, eurooptic.com. EuroOptic.com. And that's where you can save money on Vortex. Anything on that website that Vortex sells, you can get 10% off. Next is a brand new partner to the podcast. That is FeedHub. So if you are the person who it's legal to bait using a spin cast feeder, here's what FeedHub does in layman's terms. It's a device that can attach to any spin cast feeder, and it connects to your Moultrie mobile app, giving you on-demand functionality to where you can set your feeding times, you can remotely unclog your device by running a cycle, and it will try to unclog your spin cast feeder, as well as monitoring the level of the feed or corn or pellets or whatever you have in the hopper. So it's this device that lets you run feeders remotely, so you know when you need to go check them, and there's just less stress involved. So go to MoultrieMobile.com and check out the Feed Hub. Next on the list is a company that I'm going to be getting real familiar with here in the next couple months, and that is Code Blue Sense. Why? Because of the mock scrape kits, man. The rope-a-dope is straight legit. Just do me a favor before the season starts, go buy one. Just go buy one, set up a mock scrape, and set up a trail camera using the rope-a-dope system, and just see what walks to investigate it. That's it. That's all I'm asking. And you can go to codebluesense.com, use the discount code NFC20. It's going to save you 20%. And while you're there, you can pick up some other stuff like laundry detergent, real synthetic deer urines, scent elimination products, that kind of stuff, right? But I personally am the most excited about the Rope-A-Dope system and their mock scrape, you know, their mock scrape kit. So go check that out. Winding down our partnership with Woodman's Pal here towards the end of this month. I just want to say it's a great company. I really enjoyed working with them. Great product, man. It's a machete. It is a habitat tool. It's something that I'm going to keep in my truck, something that I'm going to keep in my pack in case I need to chop a, you know, a shooting lane or chop an access route or chop vines, like poison ivy vines, out of a tree before I go set up in it. It's just a really good tool to have. They've been around since the 40s. And on top of that, they're made in America. So go check out woodmanspal.com along with all of their leather goods, like a holster and some other leather goods that they make on that for that company. Last but not least. And then we have Huntworth, right? So Huntworth, dude, big news coming out of Huntworth. I've been told I cannot share the news that's coming out of Huntworth, but there is news coming out of Huntworth. Something new coming down the pipe. That's all I can say. Stay tuned. So they're just going to add another layer to all of the other stuff that they already have. That's very high quality, very affordable. And man, the quality, I'm not joking, man. The Durham pants that I have are my favorite thing to wear. So as soon as I'm done editing this today, I have one more meeting and then I'm heading downstairs to put on my Durham pants and I'm going to go mushroom hunting. That's the goal anyway. Huntworth, go check them out, man. Last but not least, the new Full Sneak Fight Club t-shirt is in and it is awaiting your orders. Please go out and support Full Sneak at fullsneakgear.com. We got the Slayer tee. We got the crew neck sweatshirt. We got the stocking caps. We got the Nine Finger Chronicles hat. Everything you need, go check it out, fullsneakgear.com. Now, I've whored out. Like Tony says in this episode, we're all prostitutes or hypocrites or something. Anyway, maybe I said we're all prostitutes, but I had to whore out there for a little bit so I could make my money, so I could keep doing this for a living, so I could bring this type of content to your ears. Good vibes in, good vibes out, and we will talk to you next week. 3, 2, 1. Today, we're joined by someone who has been on this podcast quite a few times, and I'm going to let him introduce himself however he wants to introduce himself. Like if there was, when you die, if there was a plaque on the side of a building somewhere, whatever town you live in, what would it say?
Man, the world's most prolific squirrel hunting article writer. Does that sound good?
That's great. Do you specialize?
And that's probably not even true.
Yeah, could be. And the reason I say that is because I have never read an article about squirrel hunting. So
can I revise it? World's 7th most prolific squirrel hunting article writer.
Really? Well, with you being a writer, do you know any other writers out there who are strictly squirrel hunting writers? They make a living, feed their family?
You'd really have to pinch your pennies if that was your, like, if that's the lane you choose, man, I don't know if you're going to make it. I'm living off of $700 a year and a lot of squirrel meat.
I can just see it now, like, 5 strategies to be successful in the squirrel rut. Dude, squirrels are hilarious. Like, I don't know. I just love watching squirrels in the woods. Like if I'm having a bad day, like this past season, I think I saw like a couple orgies break out, squirrel orgies break out, like just everybody's banging everybody. And then there's a fight that breaks out and then an owl comes and they get scared and run away. Squirrels, dude.
I like squirrels, man.
Yeah. Do you eat squirrel meat?
I have eaten squirrel meat many, many, many times.
Okay.
One of the things that never occurred to me you know, before I had kids was that if I have little girls, they will not be super into squirrel hunting the same way if I had little, like my buddies who have little boys, squirrels are a big deal, man. And my daughters think they're cute. Same thing with rabbits. And so we never did, we squirrel hunted some, we rabbit hunted a little bit, but we didn't do the same kind of small game to turkeys to deer progression that I just sort of expected would happen. And it was mostly because my daughters thought they were cute and didn't want to kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So on the last episode that I launched, I talk about this video game called Way of the Hunter that we have. And on the PlayStation 5 that we got the kids for Christmas. And it is a basically a simulator where you live in this cabin. There's a whole backstory, but you can go out and you can shoot, man, everything from moose to rabbits, foxes, wolves, elk, whitetails, mule deer, mountain goats, bighorn sheep, all that stuff. You can, like, it's crazy. It's a really fun game, actually, but it's also pretty educational. And because I sit there and I kind of guide my kids through how to approach these, hunting these animals. And it's pretty realistic because you get a look for their tracks and you can follow their tracks to their feeding areas. And then, but you got to be careful because your scent might blow into them and it'll spook them and they'll run away. So you have to be downwind of them. Anyway, my daughter is lining up on a mule deer with her rifle in the game. And she's like, "Dad, where do I shoot?" I said, "Okay, the vitals are the heart and the lungs. That's what you want to aim for. And for the most part, if you hit it there, they're going to die." And then my son, my oldest son, he's like, "But Dad, if you shoot them in the head, they will die instantly." So he's been walking around in this video game head shooting animals because they die faster. They in the game, you shoot them in the head, they drop straight to the ground. And, and it's kind of hard to argue with that. You don't have to go on a blood trail or anything like that. And so he's just in this video game, head shooting mule deer and elk and moose. It's crazy, man. It's something to watch.
I hope he leaves that in the digital realm.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know anybody like in your sphere who actually has taken a headshot?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. Back in the day when we were shotgun hunt, like when I was part of a shotgun hunting group, if there was a drive there was a couple old timers who, I don't know why they believed this, but they would aim for head and neck. And they thought and I'm talking guys that would have been in their 50s 20 years ago. So 50 year olds 20 years ago. So now they're in their 70s. And so these guys, I mean, even a little bit of my stepdad, he's like, man, we used to shoot him in the neck and the head all the time on deer drives that would come in where the deer would be coming in slow underneath of like a tree stand or, you know, a guy in a tree, pop, drop him. He's like, they just dropped instantly. And so now I don't know. I've also seen deer drives go horribly wrong where dudes are just unloading shells, blowing legs off deer and shit like that, right? The complete wrong way to do it. But I mean, dude, just guys I know back in the day, they'd be aiming for the head all the time.
Yikes.
Yeah. And so
yikes.
I've never intentionally shot any type of animal in the head. Well, maybe like a, obviously turkey, but with a bow in 2012, I had a buck come straight into my tree stand and he saw the bottom step I snort wheezed him across the creek and he came in and then he was broadside at 20. I drew back and then he took a 90 degree turn right at my tree stand. He was at 10 yards. I drew back and I was already drawn back because he was at broadside. Yep. And then he saw the bottom stick on my lone wolf stick and he followed it up to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. And he saw me, he got alert and I put it right below the white spot for a frontal because I'll admit I will take a frontal shot if the conditions are right. But right as I released the arrow, he loaded and dropped to take off, and his head was still up at me, and the arrow went through his nostril all the way down his throat, and one of the blades on the broadhead and the other blades obviously did a lot of internal damage in his throat, just ripped his carotid artery all the way down his throat, and he bled out in massive blood trail. He was dead in 60 seconds, probably. Just bloop, bloop, bloop. And so it wasn't intentional, but man, there's a lot of good stuff up here that if anybody gets hurt, it you're gonna die.
Let's just not encourage that.
No, I know.
Don't aim for the nostril, folks.
No, I don't. But see, you know, like in 2020, I took the same exact shot on a whitetail, and he took two hops. He was dead in 30 some seconds, disconnected the heart from his lungs, and he was dead. Boop, boop, dead. And so, I don't know, man. Maybe your frontal shot isn't the most ethical. I feel confident in that shot. Do you take frontals?
Never.
Never?
Nope.
Okay.
I literally have never on elk or deer or anything. I mean, I've taken like severe quartering, you know, like I've taken shots I should not have taken.
Yeah.
But just the frontal thing has just never, I've never done it.
Yeah. And so let me ask you this. Why don't you tell me your opinion on why maybe I should reconsider frontal shots?
Because one time when you tried it, you shot one through the nostril.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you, more seriously though, you know how this goes. When you film whitetail hunts, they drop every time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost impossible to shoot at a whitetail where it doesn't drop a little bit, even when it's totally relaxed. And, you know, you have that situation where you're talking about where he's like, oh shit, there's a guy, right? You know? Yeah. Like he's like in the moment figuring out that deer's going to load his legs up big time.
Yeah.
And so if you're the kind of hunter who can recognize that situation every time and be like, I know this is going to be a big drop here, or I know, you know, it's going to be a couple inches just out of a reflex, but it's just, to me, I was writing about this morning. I'm to the point now where I'm like, I really just want perfect broadside, or even better, that quartering away shot, and just like I want my margin of error to be as in my favor as much as possible.
Yeah, dude, I get that. I 100% get that. But when it comes to, for me, and I think a lot of it on what kind of shots I take are either quartering towards or quartering away, pretty hefty. Recently. And I think it's because the strategy I use as far as where I place my tree stands, like I try to put my tree stands where I feel I'm going to be the closest to this animal. Sometimes they come in broadside, like not last year, but the year before. Both last 2 years, complete broadside shots. Great, you know, absolutely great. One was a little back. But still broadside. Okay. And it worked great. But a lot of times these deer that come in, they're walking straight to my tree stand. Right. And so it's because I'm trying to get them as close as possible. Cause you know, so go ahead.
Why? I mean, so I'm just curious, like what range are you looking for when you say as close as possible?
Well, like, in the thick areas that I love to hunt, right? Unless I'm hunting on some kind of wide open edge or field edge, I really like getting into the nasty shit where basically max I'm going to shoot 20 yards, yeah. Right? I've never shot, the longest I've ever shot a deer and killed it is 32 yards. That's the longest bow kill I've ever had. And so, And I just, when I'm in that thickness, there's only so many areas that you can put a tree stand up and have pockets to shoot into. Right. And a lot of the times those pockets are the trails that are coming to and from specific areas. So that's what I've always kind of done. When I have the opportunity to hunt 10, 15 yards off of a trail that I think they're going to be running on, then I'll do it. But a lot of times, man, you know how it is. These big thickets are, there's no rhyme or reason in there. You got to, you got to go with what's available.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I think maybe the hunting industry specifically has kind of done a disservice to just the general hunting population is you are fed videos all the time of people who have like perfect setups.
Yeah.
Where you're like, the deer always go through here and we're set up here 20 yards away. But you know how it is when you go out and you have to find your spots and you're like, I got to scout this year and I got to find where they are. And you're like, this is the place. It's your biggest battle isn't finding where the bucks are using right now. It's finding a setup that works where that spot is. I mean, you deal with that constantly. So you do make some concessions and you bring up kind of an interesting point there. Like I'm to the point now where my ideal shot is 20 to 30 yards. Mm-hmm. I just love, I'm a single pin shooter. And so if the trail's 24 yards away, I'm like, I dial in at 24 and that's great because, if they get too far out, we get the long range shooting thing, what goes on there.
Yep.
But if they get too close, and that's often the goal of people who are like not experienced enough to understand where your point of impact changes and your angle, then you can get in trouble there too. Yeah. Like, because you close up that vitals a little bit by the angle. And so you have to just know what you're doing. If you're, if you find that spot where they're going to pass by at 5 yards, that sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. And for people who know what they're doing, it's great.
Yeah.
But if you're like brand new to it and you're not really good at thinking through the point of impact as he moves and changes, that close shot can be trouble too.
Yeah, it definitely can. It definitely can. And obviously the closer they get to the tree stand, the more likelihood they have of, in some way, busting you or whatever. Right. So it's something that I always play around with, right? I don't know if this makes me sound like a bad guy, but I don't have the time to hunt and scout like I used to. So I'm using all of my experience as far as strategy is concerned in the time that I'm allotted. And that is usually only during the hunting season. Like I cannot get out and scout as much as I used to just from life and work and stuff like that. And so when I'm going, I'm trying to go to a spot that I am going to have the highest odds and have deer as close as humanly possible. And a lot of times, maybe I need to rethink my strategy, but a lot of times they're coming hard quartering or hard away from me. And in the past, man, I'll be completely honest, right? I've had some Texas heart shots that went bad before. I've had some, I look back at my 20 years of bow hunting, and I'm trying to calculate, like, I've hit deer, not just bucks, maybe 4 deer with my bow that I did not recover, okay? Two of them were massive bucks that one was a straight up or actually I take that back. One was a doe and 3 were bucks. And you can sit here and dissect that all you want, but I don't know, man, maybe I need to rethink where I'm setting up and how I'm setting up.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that happens to people is you can slip, like, especially with a big buck, right? You're not going to do this with a doe, but if you're hunting your ass off and it's, day 7 of your rutcation and that buck comes in, it's really easy to slip into that, like, I'm shooting mode.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting a shot off mode. And that changes everything because you kind of like get into this adrenaline fueled desperation thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it even with turkeys. I mean, we see it with pheasants sometimes where we're having a bad day and working our asses off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that rooster that flushes like right at the edge of the range, or he flushes behind you and he's already going 70 miles an hour before you get a spun around and you send a couple into the atmosphere that are just like a total lost cause, but you're in that mode where you're like, I want to shoot. Mm-hmm. And that's that can lead you down some rough roads.
You're right. You're 100% right. This year I got into that. So I had the opportunity where, with my number one target buck, where I felt like I was gonna, I mean, chip shot, right? 19 yards. I didn't seal the deal. And then I got into a mode where I was just like, it's time for a blood bath, man. I just want to kill something. I want to kill something. Luckily, the deer that I ended up shooting came by at 25 yards, zipped him, and he died within sight. So it was, I don't know, like maybe that's my next phase of this. But here's the deal. You know, like when you do something, I've made bad shots on deer, okay? But even some of those marginal shots that I've made resulted in me killing the deer, and I've been able to recover them. And so I guess from a conditioning standpoint, for the most part, what I'm doing is working, right? So now I might have to go back and say, hey, listen, maybe it may be working, but maybe it's not. It's still not good. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot lately about how we're kind of, we all draw our own lines in the sand, right? And we're all just hypocrites. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, like the most classic example, right, is like everybody, not everybody, a lot of people look at crossbows as they're too far.
Yeah.
But there's a certain percentage of hunters that look like compound bows are too far. Mm-hmm. There's a certain percentage of hunters who are like cell cameras are too much, but traditional cameras are okay. You know, and we're all kind of sitting here going like, this is where I feel we should be, but everybody's different and everybody has different situations.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about like, should I be taking shots or not? I mean, I really think it's like, you're kind of just learning as you go.
Yeah.
Even if you've done it for 20 years and killed a bunch of big stuff, if you're like, man, this shot always works for me, like I can keep my shit together and make it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, that's up to you.
Yeah. And that's actually one topic that I wanted to touch base with you today about. And we'll see, on this piece of paper I had, I don't know, can you see it? Oh, there, is that it? Do you see
there
that?
There we go.
It says Roadhouse. And then it has some scribbles of what I actually wanted to talk about today.
I like how there was only 7 words on that note and 4 of them were spelled wrong.
Are you serious?
No.
Well, hypocrites is definitely...
I think you might have butchered hypocrites.
Yeah, hypocrites. Hey, give me a break. This is my podcast, dude. Lay off. I've never, you know, I'll be honest. I've never been good at spelling. Never. Never. And now that I have a phone that does it for me and I can just talk into it, I'm that type of old person. So
it's okay, buddy.
It's okay.
We all have holes in our game.
Exactly. Mine are just so big that the ship will go down eventually. So
yeah, join the club, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but on this topic though, right? Disagreements between hunters, right? Like we just had kind of a minor disagreement on shot placement and things like that. But when it comes to like rules and regulations, these are the big ones that we talk about all the time. And trail cameras, right? Trail cameras on public, cell cams versus regular trail cameras. And so how do we as a community, if me and you have disagreements on certain rules and regulations, how do we, I mean, have communication or a conversation or whatever, that at the end of the conversation, my opinion is still going to be my opinion and your opinion is still going to be your opinion. And let's say we're both advocates for our own message. How do we then find the greater good within that to do what's best for the natural resource?
Self-reflection, buddy. I mean, we are all hypocrites.
Oh yeah.
Like you just, in every facet of our lives, but if you want to look at hunting specifically, when you see people take a hard line in the sand and they go, I'm not for this thing.
Yeah.
This is too much. Mm-hmm. Look at your life. Like I started bow hunting in 1992 when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
I've I've started before there were cell phones, before there were trail cameras. You know, we had the shittiest Wally World camo you could imagine, froze all the time, big steel tree stands. You know, climbing sticks weren't even a thing. I mean, you were using screw-in steps or, you know, nailing boards to a tree. And when you look at the progression of this stuff, if you would have taken the hunters back then and said, you're going to have this little device in your pocket that you can pull up a satellite image of where you're going to hunt and zoom in and see food sources and zoom in and literally see trails and water sources, people would have been like, that's way too far.
Yeah.
We don't need that. And so, but we just kind of naturally adopt what like works for us and we feel good about. And when you have a lot of experience traveling around to hunt, like let's take baiting, for example.
Okay.
A lot of hunters hate baiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
For very obvious reasons.
Right.
But those hunters didn't grow up in Texas.
Right.
Some of them did. Yeah. Right. You know, that they didn't grow up where that's a way of life, or you have 10,000 acres of mesquite wasteland with very little to work with. And so their situation is just vastly different. And so to be like, that's terrible, but my way is good. Well, your way might be living in Iowa where the soil is the best in the country and you have food everywhere and a high deer population. And it's like a totally unrelatable situation. And we do that with everything. And so my thing with this stuff is like, just look at the way you've changed. Look at the way that your hunting has changed, or like the things that you use now that you maybe would have thought no way 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can find something.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that the other like component of this that I'm way more concerned with is we are very good at voting away somebody else's opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, like as long as it doesn't affect us, you know, we're like, yeah, get rid of those cell cameras in, you know, Canvas or whatever. Like it's easy for us to do that. But when that stuff goes away, it doesn't come back. And you see this, you know, like in the hound hunting world, you see this with predator hunters. We feel very safe right now as whitetail hunters that we're going to have our opportunities. But when something goes away, when the state is like, no more of this, because you guys have been bitching so much, you don't get it back.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be something that doesn't mean anything to you, or it might be something that's like, man, I really love using a lot of trail cameras and getting pictures and scouting that way.
Yeah.
You know, and if somebody takes that away, it's like, did it really benefit the resource? If so, that's a different conversation. If it was because people are pissed and they don't use it, like that, I don't like that. Like, I think we need to be very careful about trying to take stuff away because it's not going to come back.
Yeah. So, but we don't know what the future holds as far as technology is concerned. And I'm just this image of a guy on his cell phone running live stream through a camera that's connected to a crossbow where he's not even there. He's just, it's real. He's maybe he's sitting on his couch, pushes a button, arrow launches, shoots the deer. And then he gets up and he goes and finds it, right? Oh, look what I did. I hunted today. Well, we look at that and we go, well, that's not really hunting, man. That's more video game mode. But the end result is a deer dead on the field. So, you know, and you mentioned hound hunting, right? I've had experiences where a guy has the same, there's a guy, he has the same permission to hunt, to run his dogs and coon hunt in this big block of timber that I have access to here in Iowa. And a couple years ago, or I think it was maybe 4 years ago, I was chasing an absolute giant and I had him pegged. I was just waiting for him to show up in daylight. Okay. Next time I go check my trail cameras, here comes a side-by-side with two hounds in it and a guy. And they were running coons and that buck disappeared for probably 2 weeks. Okay. And so as a deer hunter, I go, I hate that. It ruined me. It ruined my thing. But eventually the deer came back and then, you know, he came back into his territory. And I think a lot of people think on certain things that everybody always thinks short term. Like, hey, listen, I only get 2 weeks to hunt. So anything any rule and regulation needs to match that week or that those two weekends or that one gun season. Everything needs to match to make me have the best experience possible. Meanwhile, there's other people who are, you know, who are hoping that they have a different experience that may be counterintuitive to what you're trying to do.
Right. I mean, we're pretty myopic in how we view this stuff. And, you know, you could look at that. I mean, I look at that and I go, just my personal bias is I'm like, I feel like the whitetail hunt's more important than the hound hunt, but that's stupid. You know, like if you don't own the land and the landowner is like, hey, you can go do this and he can go do that, you have equal right to go do your thing.
Right.
And, you know, like, it's like, that's just how this stuff goes. And that's one of the things I feel like I've gotten way better at accepting as I've gotten older. You know, like the farm, you know, I was just turkey hunting with my daughters down in southeastern Minnesota on this farm I've talked about a million times. And, you know, the landowner has some buddies who hunt certain seasons. And so we work around that. And, you know, deer season, they let a lot of people in. And it used to bother me a lot where I would put in a lot of work. And then, you know, a couple different groups of shotgun hunters would show up and they'd blaze through there. And after the season, I'd find dead deer. And I was looking for every reason to hate these dudes.
Yeah.
Because they were taking something that was very important to me and they were using it in a way that I was like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
But they're showing up for their traditional shotgun hunt. And now I'm kind of like, that's just, you know, I can't write a check for that property.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, I'm pretty lucky to be able to get to go in there with my daughters or by myself and hunt. And that's just like part of the deal.
Yeah.
But it's so easy to get a red ass about it, you know?
Yeah. So does that mean that someone, like both parties need to sacrifice? So in that example, you put all this work into archery season, right? And maybe it doesn't work out for you. And then gun season comes and they just drive the shit out of it and it just blows up your spot and it's not as good. I think we can both agree that after gun seasons, things change, right? And so how do you, is there even a conversation that is had in an example like that between the shotgun hunter? Like if you were to say, hey man, I would really appreciate it. You can hunt it, but don't drive it. And then they would say, go fuck yourself. Right. You know, right. Like, yeah. So is there, does someone just need to say shit happens is what it is in a scenario like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I have no control in that situation. Right. Now there are a couple of bow hunters who've been out there a long time and we work together, right? Like we have a kind of just a gentleman's agreement. If you're parked here, I won't go in. If I'm parked here, you won't go in. Mm-hmm. We share some information. You know, if I kill right away, I'm like, guys, my stands are all yours. Here's where they are. Mm-hmm. It instead of being adversarial about it, because they are just deer, right?
Right.
Like, instead of just being like kind of gatekeeping and being like, I just don't like taking that path anymore. And I see this on public land a lot too, where, you know, you bump into people and most of them are pretty good. Like most of them kind of have this sort of code where they're like, oh, I was here first or you were here first. Or if you want to go that way, I'll go this way. Good luck, whatever. It's when we get, you know, real caught up in like, it's my hunt and I deserve it, or I'm entitled to a certain way. That's when shit hits the fan.
Yeah. Yeah. And the first year I went out to South Dakota. Second year, because I went by myself, dude. I was running into people all the time, and I was getting pissed. Like, and I had this, and it literally took me a couple days to go, Jesus, you are a douchebag, because I felt like I own this land, or not necessarily own it, but I'm here. You should go somewhere else, and then, you know, after that year of that, I was just like, that is so stupid. That's so arrogant. Right. And then I, you know, oh, see a guy, let's go the different direction. That's it. And so,
well, and dude, if you're hunting a public land spot like that and you're running into a lot of people, I realize it's open there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a different deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can also look at it like if I'm over the counter elk hunt would be a perfect example. If you're running into tons of people, you're probably not hunting the way you should be.
Exactly.
It should be informing your strategy.
Right. Right. And that's what I take away from it now is, okay, guy over here, I need to go over here. Oops.
Yep.
Guy over there, get back in the truck, let's drive 10 miles down the road and let's go check a new spot or whatever, you know, whatever the scenario is. But in regards, so now let's take people out of the equation. Well, people are always in the equation, but that's a scenario where it's not really a rule or a regulation, right? It's just two people doing two different methods of hunting that, especially with gun and bow hunters, you know, gun hunters, bow hunters, there's that type of conflict. But now I want to talk about rules and regulations regarding technology and maybe the cell cam ban on Kansas, or, you know, the difference between people who are anti cell cam versus people who are pro cell cam, right? And so how do those two types of people communicate with each other?
Hey, let's just clear this up quick. There hasn't been any cell camera ban in Kansas.
They're on public land.
Right. There was a camera ban on public land.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
What was your question?
The question is, so how do people with opposing views when it comes to technology have a communication? So is there one person? Because in the bow hunt, in that scenario that you said, the bow hunter, you, has to just kind of say, screw it, and let it go. Basically, you just let it go. Let these other people do what they want to do. Is there that same someone has to let it go in order to have this? Or is there a legit conversation that can be had with these two parties and in the Department of Natural Resources when it comes to, let's just, for the example we're using, is cell cams?
Listen, again, I think you look at this as how's the resource doing?
Yeah.
You know, if your deer are doing great, I mean, we're dealing with this with turkeys right now, where they're trying to figure out why turkey populations are tanking in so many different states. And one of the thoughts behind that, and I don't know if this is true or not, but this is from smarter people than me, is we've gotten really good at killing dominant toms, mm-hmm. which means every time we take out that lead bird, those birds, the rest of the birds have to figure out who's the top dog. And they start over, and that potentially has an impact on how many hens get bred and when they get bred. And so we might be directly influencing in a negative way the turkey populations just by having good decoys and figuring this shit out.
Yeah.
And so if that's true, you're probably going to have to regulate for that.
Yeah.
Right? Now, like with cell cameras, you know, the division between people who think cameras are terrible, people who like traditional cameras, people who are all in on every kind of camera you can get, I kind of look at that and I go, I don't feel great personally about where cameras are going. Mm-hmm. I also know that it's like I'm not stopping that train. So I'm like, okay, if the deer population in whatever region or state seems to support it, and we're not seeing a huge increase in the kill, I'm like, okay, it's more of a perception in our heads then. Now, if you take another example of, let's say, crossbow hunting, like if you look at the county that I hunt in northern Wisconsin, when they legalize crossbows, our buck kill, because Wisconsin's a two-buck state, kill one with an archery tag, kill one with a gun tag. If you look at the buck kill in that county, it surpassed the firearms kill in like 3 years. Mm-hmm. So now you have data that shows you that this thing, however you feel about it, has changed the amount of bucks on the landscape, mm-hmm. you know, in an appreciable way. So you look at that and go, the resource is changing because of this. Mm-hmm. So is this something that we need to look at, you know, to like, because it's obviously impacting how many deer are out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, if something like that's happened, I'm all for, let's take a real look at why this is happening. But if it's, you know, if you're sitting there and you're like, the deer counts are consistent, the success rate hasn't changed, I'm like, okay, then the technology probably isn't offering people as big of an advantage as some people would like to think.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so now you're left with a changing resource, right? Okay. Crossbows. You know, I've heard some statistics. I'm not going to try to make any numbers accurately here, but when the same thing happened in Ohio and now the archery tags are getting filled, the percentage of archery tags are getting filled more, and I think it was 70%. I think it was as high as 70% of all archery kills were crossbows, were crossbow kills. And so was using a crossbow. And so that right there is another example of what you just said, man, you know, when it starts affecting the resource. But this is where I see the trouble start to happen here, right? And that is, hey, man, how dare you take away my right to use a crossbow? Because I used to be anti, maybe I'm not used, maybe I still am, in Iowa, right? In Iowa, I'm still like, keep crossbows out of the archery season unless you meet these certain criteria, right? And you know, and so now, but I've been thinking about, like, why can't a guy use a crossbow, right? Why can't he do this, and this? But data supports that, man, you're going to have a better chance of killing a deer with a crossbow compared to a compound bow. And so that's one thing that I've been thinking about recently is, where does a person's right to use a specific weapon interfere with that natural resource? Because really what it comes down to is big bucks, right?
Right.
People going out, more hunter, like, let's just use crossbows. Crossbows are easier to sight in off the shelf, meaning you have to spend less time with them to be accurate, period. I don't care. Like, I disagree. If someone has an argument for that, I'll disagree with you all day long. Okay.
Right.
They have longer ranges and are more accurate at longer ranges than a compound bow, period. I think that's pretty safe to assume. And then,
I think you should say, I don't think they have longer ranges. I think they give a longer range to people who wouldn't be able to get it with a vertical bow.
Exactly. You're right. Okay.
I mean, really, if you look at the difference between, you know, I don't know, shooting 50 yards with a vertical bow and shooting 50 yards with a crossbow for the average person, mm-hmm. their ability to do that with a crossbow is a hell of a lot easier, especially in the right. field, than it is with a vertical bow.
Right. Okay. So is there a correlation between all of these things and mature, like age structure and mature levels of deer, whether that's does or bucks? Because one thing that I have just, it's all connects somehow. And I'm not really good at describing this. Maybe you could be, but it's all revolves around antler size. All this shit revolves around antler size. And that's why certain people get pissed off when there are certain rules and regulations that get introduced or taken away. And it affects their, a single person's ability to shoot a big antler deer. And that's where all the panties get into a bunch, if that makes sense.
That's where the bitching comes from. Yeah. I mean, I got a buddy who's a conservation officer in southern Minnesota, mm-hmm. and he jokes all the time about how nobody calls him if they suspect their neighbor killed a spike illegally. Mm-hmm. But man, if they shot the 150-incher that everybody had on camera and there's a whiff of something that might have been done wrong, he's like, I'm getting a phone call.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can't divorce a lot of the negative aspects of hunters and how hunters treat hunters from our just relentless, like, desire to kill big deer.
Greed, right? Yeah, is that just a good word to use?
Of course. I mean, it's just like inherent in us. Mm-hmm. We can't get away from it. And so, yes, a lot of these problems, they come directly from the general desire, the general greed for big antlers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that the downfall?
Well, in a broad sense, probably. I mean, if you look at the trend of hunting land and access to ground to hunt on, the desire to have a place to control, to kind of do your hit list thing and just have to work the deer, mm-hmm. is locking up a lot of land. People yeah. buy it, people lease it. It's taking what, you know, 25 years ago maybe would have supported 10 or 15 hunters through a season, mm-hmm. down to maybe one or two.
Right.
And so, you know, they go, some of them quit, some of them go somewhere else. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the trophy thing is, I think it's been harming us for a long time, but I kind of feel like it's just, we're just living with it. And so, you know, like if you look at you know, you brought up crossbows, right? Or we were talking about crossbows and their impact on the resource in X state or Y state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's going to happen in some states is there will just be a crossbow season. We've done full-on inclusion in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And if we see that resource diminishing, they're going to look at it just like the difference between a vertical bow and a rifle hunt or a shotgun hunt. It's like, you don't want, down there in Iowa, you don't want shotgun hunters out there from October 1 until sometime in January, right?
No.
Too much of an advantage.
Right.
And so now if you look at crossbows and go, well, they don't give you the shotgun advantage, but they give you 20 or 30% more chance to kill a deer, mm-hmm. maybe more. I don't know. I'm throwing numbers out there.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have to look at that. The state game agency is going to have to look at that and go, maybe that opens on October 15th and shuts down on November 7th.
Yeah.
Or something to sort of thread that needle with the overall harvest and the success rate.
Yeah. Do you think when it comes to optimal management of a resource that ultimately somebody is going to lose what they want to do or what they like to
100%.
Do?
100%. Yeah. 100%. I mean, just think about this occurred to me last year. I was muzzleloader hunting this public land in western Minnesota, and I went into the spot that I really wanted to hunt because I knew there were deer bedded in there because I watched them go into the cattails in the morning. And I walk in there, and the first thing I see from this hill is two does running through the slough, and I'm like, holy shit, what's going on? And then I see this guy with two dogs mm-hmm. pheasant hunting through there. And so I'm like, okay, well, now I'm like kind of committed to this area, but he got here first, and so I got to give him his space. And he ended up coming over and talking to me because I was in blaze orange. He saw me up on the hill, and you just look at the competing interest there, where I'm muzzleloader hunting deer mm-hmm. on a spot with a lot of pheasants, and I had actually killed my limit of roosters in the middle of the day on another part of this property. And this property is divided between a WMA and a WPA, so a wildlife management area and a waterfall production area. Same property, but halfway through the middle, you can use lead shot, and halfway through, you can't. Okay. And so I start talking to this guy, and he's like, yeah, I'm kind of struggling to get my birds. And I was like, well, I just killed two roosters over on the other side here and kind of told him where. And I was like, there was a lot of birds flying in when I left to go get the switch out weapons and muzzleloader hunt. And he's like, I'm not going over there because I'm not paying. I don't like hunting with steel, and I'm not paying for the expensive tungsten or bismuth. And it kind of got me thinking, like, as I was sitting there, I'm like, we're dealing with a lot of bullshit out there already.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And the experience that you might have on there and what you bring to that little chunk of public land versus what I bring in is so vastly different. It made me realize we're all just like, kind of following our own path and dealing with the shit on our own, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, there's just so many things, and they all seem to be minuscule compared to, like, the term that comes into my head is the greater good, right? Is there a greater good in certain states where, because I'll just kind of tell you what I think about a lot in Iowa. And that's access, right? What you're seeing is, non-resident landowners. You're seeing even corporations buy land now for investments, and it's just strictly farming. Nobody can hunt it, or if they do, it's leased, you know, for optimal profit, basically, either leased or outfitted or whatever. And so, I go, okay, what's the greater good here? A single hunter is taking up more acres to hunt, and it's kicking people. There's this displacement. I talk about it all the time, but I'm trying to see if there is a medium or a bridge or something to where it doesn't become the worst case scenario, because ultimate landowner rights are going to win, right? Yeah. I own this property. I'm going to do whatever I want on this property. If I want to buy it and kick out 13 other hunters out of this piece, I'm going to do it. And I agree with that, right? Landowner. I mean, you're going to buy the property. You do whatever you want. I'm going to cut down every tree and I'm going to plant radishes. Shit. I don't know. Whatever the case is. And Is there, but is there, is, does that guy need to say, okay, well, I bought the farm and now I'm going to manage it for big bucks, but I also have to, I should let other people come hunt it because I've displaced a lot of people.
Well, I mean, you could look at it that way, or you could just look at it like, it's just not that important to kill big deer.
Right.
It's cool. And it's, if we're not like, if we're not letting people out, like if we're not taking more people, it doesn't matter anyway.
Right.
You know, cause when you talk like the trends you talk about are absolutely happening, mm-hmm. and they are restricting access. And then you have this parallel situation again with landowner, with what landowners want to do, where in Iowa, when you look at just, for example, in Iowa, when you look at the price of ag land and how it's still selling like crazy, and how often you see those bulldozers go through that little tree row, or like how often you see what, you know, if you were in Michigan, that would look like terrible deer cover. But in mm-hmm. Iowa, those deer are using it because yeah. there's trees there or CRP or whatever. And that's going as away as well. Mm-hmm. So you have like two things working against you there. And you know, you're not going to tell a farmer not to bulldoze those trees and plant an extra acre. He's yeah. going to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I kind of think you're right. Like, I kind of think we have an obligation now to just, if we have, if we're lucky enough to have places to hunt and we can let other people in, like, you know, I'm not saying treat it like it's public land and just mm-hmm. let anybody in, but giving people the opportunity that you trust, or you're like, this person seems like the kind of person who will appreciate this. I think that's just a net positive for us.
Yeah. So what's that conversation look like between, let's say, you, the landowner who has sole hunting rights to his property, one person hunts, let's say 100 acres. I don't know. That's just an easy number. And I come in and I go, hey, Tony, do you know the greater good? We would serve a better purpose and a greater good if you would let three other hunters on your property. Like, what do you think the real response to that would be to some of these landowners in Southern Iowa?
Well, of course they're not going to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course they're not.
Nobody gives a shit.
Right.
Nobody gives a shit. Nobody gives a shit about anything. Really. When you think about, like, all like everybody has fucking blinders on and all they see is their own success. Meanwhile, they don't give a shit if they're kicking off 15 people and there's a percentage of those people who are going away bye-bye forever. Right?
Right.
I don't know, man. But at the same time, how can you blame that guy? He has a dream and he has a goal he wants to accomplish. Right?
I think what you see with a lot of people is I think we kind of pick the worst example and use that as like the standard. Mm-hmm. Steve Rinella does this all the time. When he's like, whitetails are dumb. I'm like, yeah, the Texas whitetails you're hunting,
right?
You know, that are coming in the feeder, they're not the same thing as in the UP in Michigan, right?
Right.
Right. But we like to say, well, the dude who's obsessed with big bucks and he has a bunch of money and he leases land, he's the enemy. Mm-hmm. But I think most people out there, and I've seen this with a lot of people I know who went really hard in the trophy hunting paint. Like they were like, you know, the name and deer, super pissed off if the neighbor killed one of their bucks or whatever. You see a lot of that stuff mellow out mm-hmm. when people kill enough of them where you're like, it's nobody really cares but me, you know? And so I actually have a little bit of hope. Like I have, you know, that farm that I was talking about in Minnesota, one of my really good buddies, he didn't have a place to hunt like 7-8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So when I asked the landowner for every year, because I ask him every year, I said, hey, you know this guy, do you care if he hunts with me? And the landowner's like, I don't care at all who you bring out there. Mm-hmm. And so this guy gets a spot to hunt. Well, this guy also got offered a lease opportunity very close to there a few years ago. And he's very generous with it. Now, is he going to go deer hunt his prime time, you know, during the rut and kind of keep that to himself? Sure. But he's the kind of person who's like, yeah, you need a place to hunt, you can come with me, or we're going to turkey hunt together, or you want some meat for the freezer, we've got lots of does in the late season, or what, like mm-hmm. that stuff happens out there. And I think it's important to kind of recognize that. Cause when you're like, the only thing I care about this land is that it can produce another 5.5-year-old buck for me that I can keep from everyone else till I kill it, we're losing. you know? And it's not like it's that pursuit in and of itself is bad, but when it keeps you from everything else, like that's just the only thing you care about, it tends to result in this kind of shit.
So do you think that when someone says, hey man, I'm doing all this habitat work just for the greater good of the natural environment, it's kind of bullshit?
Of course it is. I mean, I think about this all the time. People use that. They say, oh, well, I put in this clover plot and the turkeys love it and the rabbits love it. And that's undeniably true. Mm-hmm. The does love it because they have fawns. But if they couldn't hunt that clover plot in the fall, they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like when you do a bunch of chores for your wife because you've been gone for 6 days, you have ulterior motives, right?
All right.
When she gets home from work and you're like, oh, here's dinner ready and I clean this and I organize the garage and everything, it's like she's looking at her watch and like, I'm going to have to pay for this in about 5 hours when the kids go to bed, right?
That's hilarious. That you just like spoke to me right there, my friend.
Right? I mean, it's just, but that's just how this stuff goes. But I do think like at the core of this, and I've gone all over with this. I think at the core of this is like, we kind of do have some level of obligation to our fellow hunters. Yep. And I'm not saying like green light strangers. I'm not saying that you have to like put yourself in a situation that really sucks, but you probably know somebody who would appreciate the shit out of some level of inclusion.
Right. Right. Man, that's so tough. It's so weird out there, man. It's like, the word that comes to mind is selflessness, right? You need, more people need to be selfless and they need to go and help others in some way, shape or form. And that's really everywhere in the world, not just in the hunting community. And then I really do think there needs to be some serious talks in the hunting community about whether or not big bucks, big antlered deer, in order to grow them to a certain age, is the right thing to do? Or is it okay? Like, so one guy can shoot that 5.5-year-old every year? Or is it better for three people to shoot 3 3-year-olds or something like that? Whatever the case is. Yep. And so like what is better in that scenario? And I think that's a conversation that the industry has to have. And because it's all money driven. I mean, all right. This land that gets bought and sold, money, the ag ground, money, right? The industry, money, right? Hunting access, most, you know, especially in Iowa, money. And yep. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
I don't either. I just, again, back to the point we had way earlier in this, when something goes away, it doesn't come back. And so when you think about the South Dakota hunt that you love, right?
Yeah.
You go into that Badlands breaky territory that's just cool as hell.
Yep.
And you get this experience that you can't get in Iowa.
Right.
You're not going to get it.
Yep.
And it's real important to you. 10% of that might be because you might kill a cool mule deer or a whitetail.
Yep.
But a lot of it is because you just want to be there and experience that with that single-minded pursuit of like, I'm going to try to stalk one, I'm going to try to find one, whatever, in this environment that speaks to me. And you know, as well as I do and anybody listening to this, your opportunities as a Iowa resident to go over there and do that are going to be diminished at some point, at maybe several points in the next decade or two.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's going to be harder to come by. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to get your fix at home, or you're going to have to get your fix somewhere else. And everybody's out there dealing with this.
Yeah.
So every, you know, and not necessarily the traveling hunt thing, but everybody's dealing with the fact that they're sort of staring down the barrel of like, this could go away.
Right.
Or this has gone away and now I have to do this. And if you've gone through that, it should make you a little bit empathetic to other people, because we're all sitting there going, yeah, I just want this time in the woods. Like I want this experience because it does something for us, especially in this day and age where we're staring at our phones for 10 hours a day and we're just like constantly fed rage bait. Like, yeah, you know, it's important. And I think we have to acknowledge that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's crazy. Like I sit there on the 30 seconds of free time that I have, or when I'm driving to and from the gym or whatever, you know, on the shitter or whatever. And I'm just, I think like all these things that I love so much, I feel, maybe I'm wrong, I feel like they're hanging by a string. The weight of all of this is hanging by a string. And for some reason, my gut tells me there's going to be a collapse of something, you know, right? Or kind of like a civil war, right? You know, we had this conversation on one of Mark's podcasts. It's like, okay, can't hunt bears with dogs. Why not? Right? Why can't you do that? And so all these things, and then those people, just imagine they're, and the way people are, let's say a bunch of hunters, like, I don't know, whether that's animal rights activists or whether that's another group of hunters saying, hey, you can't run, let's use the South for an example. You can't run dogs anymore because so many people are bitching about it. Okay, now there's going to be somebody in that group that gets their dogs taken away that's going to have some kind of vendetta, and they're going to come at you with different rules and regulations to try to go, hey, now you know how it feels, right?
Yep.
Now you know how it feels. And that is poison for everybody.
Right.
So.
Well, that's when Kansas enacted that trail camera ban on public land.
Right.
And there were a lot of Kansas hunters who were for that. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is a really dangerous precedent. Because if you just, like, for example, can't bait on public land, but you can bait on private land. You know, feeders and dumping out corn on Kansas is the method that, the dominant method. And I'm like, okay, well, what if you have these people who don't have that lease or that grandma's farm to hunt, and they were on public land, and you were one of those voices out there who said you shouldn't be able to use trail cameras on public land, even though it didn't affect you at all. Mm-hmm. And now, what if in the future somebody goes, you know what, I think dumping out a ton of corn on the ground is not fair chase, and it's not ethical, and we're going to vote on it, or we're going to run this little campaign mm-hmm. to try to sway this. And it's like, you lost some allies there for no good reason other than, like, you kind of just could. So, like, what you said is, I mean, we have two fights going on. We have the anti-hunter, non-hunter crowd, mm-hmm. which the anti-hunters, you know, they're going after the predators, and, you know, they're
animals
on the left and the right side of the country. Like, they have kind of a different agenda. The non-hunters that can be swayed against us, we're going to see that. We're seeing it in Colorado right now and a couple other states. Like, they're pretty freaking dangerous because they're really apathetic. They don't hate us. They don't love us. They're just, we could scroll across their feed and they could see an image of, you know, a dog taking down a deer or something, and that could be enough to get them to decide we can't do this thing they don't even understand.
Right.
So we have that fight, but we have this internal fight with each other all the time. Where, you know, the non-resident thing's a huge one, the crossbow, non-crossbow thing's a huge one, where we are very good at going after each other, and we understand how to go after each other far better than the non-hunters and the anti-hunters. Mm-hmm. And so we're dangerous. Yeah. Like, we can be very dangerous to the future of hunting.
Yeah. Oh, you know, one thing that I just kind of came to a realization is I like to chase big bucks, right? But my future, I just had this flash before me where I feel like I can still be pretty happy and shoot younger age class deer with smaller antlers and still, for the most part, have the same experience that I'm currently having shooting, you know, 4 or 5 year old deer. So maybe it just takes a movement of people realizing, I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer, because even if someone listens to this, it's all based off of a person's personality. I like this. I'm gonna stay with it, right?
Yep. And I mean, we humans in general just don't deal well with change.
No.
We sort of view a lot of change as negative, even when we don't know where it's gonna go.
Right.
And I think about this in my life. You know, the reason that I am hunting that farm that I keep talking about in southeastern Minnesota is because we had permission on two huge places. And by we, I mean me and my dad.
Right.
And we lost them both in the same year. We just got kicked out of one because the guy didn't want anybody else out there anymore. The other one sold. Same year. So I started the season on public land and ended up just getting permission from a kid I had in class with me mm-hmm. to this farm yeah. that I still have to this day. And I looked, when I went into that season, I was like so bummed, dude. Mm-hmm. Everything we had was gone. And I remember I sat on a tree stand opening morning and had squirrel hunters walk by me mm-hmm. just right on, you know, and I was like, this sucks. It ended up being one of the best things that happened to me mm-hmm. because where I learned to hunt was this dairy farm in southeastern Minnesota. Like, and I look at stuff like that often, and you know, I'm not saying it's like great to lose your spot, or you know how it is, you go out and hunt somewhere in the Dakotas or somewhere and you have an amazing hunt and you go next year and it's covered in people and it's changed.
Yeah,
that sucks.
Yeah,
but that's the kind of stuff that gets you to something else, mm-hmm. something better. And I, you know, you mentioned like maybe you're too hung up on 5.5-year-old bucks, like maybe you would just be happy hunting, you know, smaller deer or whatever. Yeah. And that's kind of something that's like, that's hit me really hard. Like I did that Oklahoma hunt with Steve last year and I knew we were just hunting deer. Mm-hmm. Like we weren't hunting 150 inches, right? We were on public land. There's a lot of people around. We have 4 days in October. Everything's kind of set up to just go try to find a deer. And man, it's so fun to hunt that way,
exactly.
Especially when you're
right.
used to, you know,
you're right.
And so, and I'm not saying that's like for everyone, but what I'm saying is we get locked into our mindset that it has to go this way.
Yeah.
You know, like here's another example. A lot of people who hunt in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin are complaining a lot about wolves right now. Mm-hmm. And I get it. But I also understand that you're not entitled to go have a great hunt out of that same ladder stand you've sat for 20 years. Now, the wolf issue is like a totally separate thing, but the reality of being a deer hunter is the conditions are going to change.
Right.
The woods are going to change. The predator situation is going to change. And if it's out of your control, you have to take agency over what's next. Mm-hmm. Got to go scout. Maybe you need a couple backup stands. Like you don't just get the hunt you had 20 years ago because you want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. When I was browsing through, this was last year, there was a couple people who went to, I don't know if it was Colorado or Wyoming or something like that, they were non-residents. They went in and they shot maybe a two-year-old mule deer. And they posted on social media like everybody does. And then they got a shit ton of hate by residents there that are like, why do you come to our state and shoot a small buck when you go home? So let's just use me as an example, right? I'm to the point now in South Dakota, because I haven't successfully tagged a mule deer yet, that I'm going to shoot any mule deer that is legal in South Dakota, period, right? And there's going to be people there who are like, dude, why did you shoot this buck? Because now he's not going to turn in to the deer that I like to chase, right? Meanwhile, in Iowa, I'm that guy. Why are you coming to Iowa shooting a three-year-old when there's five-year-olds here, right? And so, a hypocrite, right? Just right. Hypocrisy, right? It's so,
right?
It's so crazy. Now that I say it out loud, it's just, whatever.
It's because it's your hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, if the state's going to sell you a tag and that deer is legal, mm-hmm. everybody else can go kick rocks in the street.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're right. Well, this is a good conversation. What do you think the title of this episode should be? Nude girls, like free nude girls.
Well, if you want it to perform, it should be Dan and Tony talk about the three best ways to hunt the rut. Just bait and switch them.
Bait and switch. There you go. Bait and switch. And then on the intro that I do, hey guys, me and Tony take a deep dive into rut hunting tactics just to get them in, get that marketing money, and then just let them, what? You promised me this. And then I have to deal with that outrage. I'll just blame it on you.
How would you kill the biggest buck of your life?
You know how pissed people would be?
Yeah.
But they should know better, especially if they're listening to this podcast. So, man.
We didn't get to that what was on top of your note there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, now that we're done with the good stuff, this is the portion of the show where you can stop now. But the movie Roadhouse has been remade with Jake Gyllenhaal and that UFC fighter.
Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor. Okay. First off, I want to say RIP Patrick Swayze. That dude was one of my heroes in the 90s. And, you know, when he was doing his thing, Point Break, right? Like, that movie spoke to me in honestly a lot of ways, right? It's, you're looking for the ultimate ride. And it's kind of a metaphor for life, which is, it's not about possessions. It's not about money, having an awesome truck. It's about having the ultimate ride, which is life. And so anyway, before I get too emotional, Jake Gyllenhaal was this character now. And have you seen the movie yet?
I have not. Can we hold on 1 second?
Yeah.
When you talk about Patrick Swayze that way and you're like, Point Break is the movie, I feel like in your head you're actually envisioning yourself as Demi Moore and Ghost in the clay scene.
With Patrick Swayze's arms, like, around
just
me.
Wrapped around you, and you guys are entwining your fingers on wet clay.
Oh my God. I wouldn't say no. Let's just say I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say no.
Right. I know.
Right. Right. And so, anyway, Pat, like, these, it gets remade. So this weekend, right, we have a lot of rain coming to the Midwest, and there might be some inside time for you, maybe involve your family. Maybe sit down and watch it. I'll give my 2 cents real right here. I don't like it. And I don't like it because I feel like Patrick Swayze is one of my favorite movie actors from my past, right? And so I think it came up real short. And although I do like Jake Gyllenhaal as an actor, you know, Conor McGregor, he's just in there because he's Conor McGregor. But
right,
you know, and it was one of those made, I don't even know if it went straight to the theaters. I don't think it went to the theaters. I think it went straight to Prime Video. And so that's what all the, you know, everybody's doing that now. Netflix, right. Prime, anyway. So
let me ask.
There
you
wasn't this. Even a real, like, in, do you remember in Roadhouse where two things happened? One, he grabs the guy by the throat, squeezes his throat, and kills him that way. Then there, and another thing that really pissed me off, there was no real roundhouse, like a 1980s roundhouse. Right? The roundhouse, Jean-Claude Van Damme made millions doing these badass roundhouses. Patrick Swayze, dude had a killer roundhouse. I didn't see a really good roundhouse in that movie.
It's amazing to me how often Jean-Claude Van Damme comes up in podcasts I have with you.
JCVD, man, that dude's the GOAT.
You know, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I think that I've never noticed this in my life, probably because I've never been the age I'm at now.
Right.
But we are at an age now where the stuff that was cool when we were younger, mm-hmm, went away, was, yep, replaced by something else. And now our peer group is in charge of making entertainment.
Yep.
And so they're playing this nostalgia thing so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Top Gun, Roadhouse, whatever. Like, all this shit's coming back around. And I feel like that's like an appeal to us. Mm-hmm. Like that, like they look at us like it's kind of an easy win, right? Like, right. Well, these guys were 10 when this movie came out and they loved it. And now it's, you know, let's feed them this and they can introduce their kids or whatever. But I find myself kind of just not loving it.
No.
Like, when I saw the previews for Roadhouse and I was like, man, some of this stuff was just original and cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to just go back to the cash register on this one and try to make a bunch more money off of what people remember about this being a good thing. Like, sometimes things are just, like, cool because that's what they were and it's over.
Yeah. Do you think, yes or no? I want a yes or no. Do you think they're going to remake Goonies?
Yes.
Oh, man, I don't want that to happen because I feel like it would ruin an entire day if I watched it and it did not compare, because it, in my head, it already has lost, even though the movie has never even been made yet. The movie, it has lost. And yeah, I hope they don't ever remake Goonies, because it is probably, I always say it's one of my favorite movies, but it's top five of my favorite movies of all time. I absolutely could sit down and watch that every time it's on TV.
Yeah. It was just done so well. You know, it's a Steven Spielberg flick back when he was just on fire like a cast. I mean, I think about this with like Stand By Me, and that, you know, I mean, the story, Stephen King's story on that was amazing, mm-hmm. but just the way they cast that with, you know, River Phoenix and Kiefer Sutherland and mm-hmm. like the whole thing, you're just like, you just got it right.
Yep.
Like we don't need this again. Mm-hmm. Like we don't need to redo this. And so, yeah, I hadn't ever thought that there would be a remake of Goonies until you asked me that. Now I'm like, of course they're going to do that, because it's so iconic.
And of course I'm going to watch it. Right. But I'm going to talk shit on it the entire time. And that, my friend, is what is wrong with humans, period. They're going to partake in something that they probably don't even want to partake in the first place. And they're going to go do it with the wrong expectations. And they're going to bitch about it the entire time when they should have probably just never watched it in the first place, or have done whatever activity is. Right. And so it's like football. Right? Like football, all these new rules that are coming out to protect the players, all these guys who played in the, you know, in the era where clotheslining and trying to kill someone was accepted and actually encouraged. Yeah, do me a favor, go grab this guy by the face mask, try to break his neck so he can't walk anymore, and then we're going to win the game. Right? Like, now it's just patty cake almost out there. Right? And so you got all
counterpoint there is not all those guys, but a lot of those guys from the NFL of 30, 40 years ago can't tie their shoes or spell their name or make it through their oatmeal breakfast without shitting their pants, you know, like, because their brains are jelly.
Yeah. Just ask Junior Seau, right?
Yeah. Right.
That's right. Probably a bad joke. I apologize. Yeah,
a little too soon.
Over the top. Is that too far?
Hey, are they going to remake Over the Top?
Oh, dude.
Or did they?
They've remade Karate Kid. Over the Top.
I remember.
Dude, that was I can remember in baseball where I would be in the dugout when I was a kid. And they're like, someone said, oh, dude, how do you get fired up for your football game or your baseball game? And I'd always go, it's like a switch. Because when he, you know, when he does that, it's like a switch,
right?
You know? And so I did that a lot. And I think you turn your hat backwards and you go wrestle some guy who's, you know, just gigantic.
Will you do that for me every time you're going to shoot a deer from now on? Will you look into the camera and switch your hat around backwards?
I don't record my hunts anymore, dude. I don't.
Oh, that's true.
I don't.
Hey. Do you know what's a prime example of what we're talking about here now that we have no listeners left and it's just you and I?
Okay, good.
Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Do you know how badass Ghostbusters was when it came out?
Mm-hmm. The original cast, the first three, right?
Right. With Slimer and the chick in the library, the ghost in the library, whatever. Mm-hmm. That was, like, so original and so good. And they've gone back. Well, I don't know how many they've made now. I haven't seen any since, like, maybe Ghostbusters 2 or whatever that came out in, like, 1991.
Yep.
But they keep doing it. And then they're like, oh, it didn't perform very well because it all women cast or something. And I'm like, no, it's because we don't need it anymore.
Right.
We had it. It was wonderful.
Yep. Yep. Well, have your kids watch that version of it. You know, the original 80s versions, 80s and 90s versions. There's no need for some of that stuff. I don't know, man. But guess what? Yeah. I watched the first remake with Paul Rudd of Ghostbusters right? And now I'm going to watch the second one when it comes out because my wife and kids want to watch it, so I'm going to do it, right? It's, I feel like life is a prostitute, and I am a willing acceptance of giving my money for enjoyment, right? Like, does that ring a bell at all, or is that just
weird? Let me tell you something. When you started that sentence, I did not think that's where that was going. Prostitute wouldn't have been in my first 1,000 guesses. Anyway, I don't even know what you were saying. I guess, yeah, you just keep giving her money.
I just give it, shamefully,
walk home.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting. Like, I'm going to give Ghostbusters 8 my money. I'm going to maybe sit there and enjoy it, but the second it's over, I'm gonna feel extremely guilty about it, and then not, like, you know, I don't know. Is this podcast over?
Dude, it's I mean, you know, this goes kind of go back to what we were talking about before. Life is just a money grab, man.
Yeah,
it's very obvious that so much of what we are fed and consumed and in what we create ourselves, we're not like immune to this shit, is just like, how well will it perform and will it keep the freaking lights on?
Yeah. Do you think you could be happy if you didn't have a fishing boat?
I think I would be less happy. Look, there's three things I need that will make me happy.
Yep.
I need a boat.
Okay.
Number one, really, boat.
Number one over all like other things, a boat.
If I don't have a boat, I stand on the shore and I pout and I cry a little and I throw a pair of middle fingers up to everybody who goes by in a boat.
You're fishing too close.
Yeah. This is my spot on the bank, asshole. If I had a boat, I'd be way out in the middle. I need a boat.
A boat.
I need maybe a guitar or two. One for sure.
You play guitar.
Gotta have it. I love playing guitar.
Holy shit. Now you know. Tony Peterson plays guitars. Holy shit.
Gotta have that. Gotta have a dog.
Okay. I love how
I
love how family was not even mentioned one time.
Listen, I'm just taking that as a given.
Oh, okay.
I'm just talking about things that I could. Right. Like, these are things that I don't need. Like, they're just different. Like,
right.
If you're talking about my personal happiness, three things that help me level up are having a boat, having dogs,
gotcha,
having guitars.
Yep. That's a country song, dude. Your life is like a country song.
I am just a walking country song. I'm not.
Not.
At all.
No. No, you're not. A country song that was sung by Tool, right?
Ooh.
Because yeah. Beyonce, she put out a country song recently. And then, like,
I can tell you how much interest I have in that.
Yeah, probably zero.
Right? Less than zero.
Less than zero. Tool. Hey, by the way, Tool came up in on my YouTube feed, and I rocked out for like 2 days straight to old Tool songs.
Good.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Do you ever get back into, like, I don't know, maybe that's your style of music that you like, but do you ever get back into? The other day, I was listening to just a random station on Pandora while I was cleaning my garage, and I was like, I have no motivation. This music brings me nothing. And then I went to Injustice for All, Kill 'Em All by Metallica. And, dude, I'll tell you what, that motivated the hell out of me to clean my garage. And I was just, I even brought my surround sound out from the house. I plugged it into the wall, and I ran it through that system. And the people on the inside of the house didn't like it, but on the outside, me cleaning the garage, dude, I think one of my favorite albums of all time is Metallica, Justice for All. I love that album.
I had that on tape, man.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
First CD, first two or three CDs, I had a paper route, and I won some award, and I got to pick three CDs to get with this award that I won. It was Tone Loc, Loked After Dark. It was Metallica Black album. And then it was, I think it was like, It was a blues album. It was like Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters combined on one album. And so that
is a range, buddy.
I know, right? Dude, I love all types of music. Like, yeah. Bumping in my car sometimes, I could be listening to anything from classical to the hardest, most vulgar rap that you would ever listen to. And everything in between. So.
Yeah, I have pretty good range. There's some stuff that I just can't hang with.
Yeah.
But one thing, you know, like when you're talking about just getting motivation clean in the garage and how the soundtrack just isn't working for you.
Mm-hmm.
You start lifting a lot and running a lot, mm-hmm. and you start to realize, not that you don't know that music is important. If you love music, you just inherently understand that.
Yeah.
But man, I've been going pretty heavy, like heavy metal lately. And it's partially just because, like, that's the thing. Like, when I go to the gym and I'm like, I'm not feeling it.
Juice.
Like, that's the thing that just gets me through. And my family is like, what is going on with you?
Yeah.
Like, it's like dark.
Yeah. So what are we talking about? Like, I don't know. Are you familiar with the band Obituary?
Or, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like, just like, oh, this sounds like what is in hell? Right. What is the soundtrack for hell?
I'll give you two examples of songs. Well, three examples of songs that I'm really stuck on right now.
Okay.
And if anybody looks them up, they're going to lose respect for me, but I don't care. One is called, the band is called Rotting Christ. In the Name of God is the song. One is called.
Holy shit, Tony.
One is Arch Spire, and the song is called Drone Corpse Aviator. I'm not making any of this up.
Drone Corpse Aviator?
Right.
Okay.
Do yourself a favor, listen to it and look at the lyrics.
Okay.
The third one that I am obsessed with, partially because I freaking love the guitarist, is After the Burial, and the song is called Lost in the Static. And that one makes my nuts tingle from the intro on.
Lost and in, what's it called?
Lost in the Static.
Okay. After we get off here, I'm going to listen to these.
Dude, you just got to be careful that you don't get into a random fight with somebody, or your chest hair doesn't grow too much, because it's going to trigger something inside of you. You're going to take a half a step back to caveman, buddy.
I'm going to walk downstairs and tell my wife, "Shut the up, right? Don't you dare look at me and talk to me."
Yeah.
And then she leaves me, and I'm stuck with alimony payments. But that's a perfect.
I mean, that took a left turn too.
I know, dude. That's all I like. You should, dude. If you were to take a sphere, like a metal sphere, and it was hollow, and you were to shoot a bouncy ball into it at 1,000 miles an hour, and that bouncy ball would never lose any velocity in that sphere, boom, 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 and just keep doing that all day. That is the best definition of what's going on in my head on a daily basis.
I believe it. Can I tell you why I like you?
Why?
So this occurred to me the other day.
Okay.
As I was making small talk with the parents from my daughter's basketball team.
Yeah.
Who are people I see for 4 months a year, mm-hmm. a couple times a week. Right? Maybe two times a week or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see them in softball or whatever. They're like the kind of people who are in your life, but you're not friends with them, but you're friendly to them.
Yep.
Because of this shared thing.
Yep.
I realized that one of the reasons I absolutely hate living in the suburbs is because there are so many people here who don't really feel like individuals to me.
Where
they're kind of like doing the soccer mom thing, or like kind of in the same life space, right? Like mm-hmm. they have their jobs, they kind of look the same, they kind of have the same kind of houses, and it's sort of, and I'm like totally stereotyping here because I know they are individual people and I do like these people, but I'm like, this is kind of a cookie cutter existence,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not comfortable with that.
Neither am I.
Like, I like people who, in my head, I like somebody who I'm like, I look at that person like they're a wild card because I don't know what they're going to say. Like, I can't see into the future. So when I'm talking to you, I'm like, Dan's just a wild card. Like, some of my buddies are just, you don't know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's very inappropriate and hilarious.
Yep.
Or just, or like when somebody, you're talking to them and they're like, here's my new hobby. And you're like, I did not see that coming. I love that shit. Yeah. One of my sister-in-laws is like that, where almost every time she talks, I'm like, I have no idea where this is going, but I'm along for the ride. Because she's like 25% nutcase, and she's into like, you know, crystals and I love her to death.
Oh, dude, you crystals.
Don't know what you're going to get with her.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that about people, and I appreciate that about you.
Well, hey, you know what? That's one of the best compliments that I've ever had in my entire life, because I don't ever try to be something. Sometimes I do when the occasion calls for it, but because I used to be that person who was like, get in line, right? I need to make this much money by the time I'm this age. I need to have this house with this car and this. And then I realized those people were just as unhappy as I was wanting to be those people. And then I threw the fuck it card at one point in my life. And I just cannot ever go back to that. I can't.
Yeah.
It's like chains on me. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I was born with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tony Peterson, it's always a pleasure to have you on this podcast, man. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this. What else? I mean, do we got you got anything going on this weekend?
You know what? Because we killed all of our turkeys right away.
All right.
And I don't have any tags until a little bit later in May. I don't have anything going on. I am next week going to Florida to go fishing.
My man.
And I am an excited little fella for that.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. What are you going after?
Anything and everything. Okay. I'm going down there with a good buddy of mine who might be the biggest wild card I've ever met. It's just a fishing trip. Just he and I, no family. That's it. Mm-hmm. We are going to target a whole bunch of inshore stuff. I have a buddy down there. If the wind lays down, we might go out and do some, you know, some real stuff out in the ocean. Mm-hmm. But we just go fishing to fish. Yeah. We're not like, I got to get a tarpon or I got to, you know, we don't know enough about it. We only have a couple days. So it's like, we're going to buy live shrimp. We're going to throw swim baits, top waters, whatever hits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll catch 10 or 12 different species of stuff and it'll be a freaking blast. And I am very excited for that.
Yeah. Well, good luck, man. That sounds like fun. I am slowly starting to get excited. I had a cell cam picture come in the other day where I had some velvet nubs on the maybe 2 inches high. And it kind of got me fired up of what I need to start thinking about here during this spring. And so I'm looking forward to that. So anyway, Tony, man, thank you for your time. And we will talk to you when we talk to you.
All right. Thanks, buddy.